This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The poppy is ascendant in Afghanistan.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. The United Nations said today that production of the plant used to make heroin has hit a record high in Afghanistan. This after more than a decade of trying to wean the Afghan economy from this deadly cash crop, which is now expanded to more than 500,000 acres, 200,000 hectares using the international measure. We reached the BBC's David Loin in Kabul this morning. Hello, David.
Hello, David.
Tell me about the opium harvest. Many a poppy was grown in Afghanistan this season.
It's a record. The last record was 2007, the year after the first real surge of troops began. And this record is the year that international combat forces are leaving. So it's a pretty big failure for the international community if stopping Afghan opium was one of the reasons for coming to this country.
And it's my understanding that somehow international aid money pumped into the Afghan economy somehow feeds into this opium trade.
It leaks out of the state sector. It leaks out of the NGOs and ends up fueling this very large part of the Afghan economy. It's believed around between a quarter and a third of the Afghan economy is fueled by this opium harvest. And for example, that's far larger than a country like Colombia, which has only about 2% of its economy, and which is equally a drug and criminal country.
In addition to everything else with opium around the world, the opium trade within Afghanistan squeezes out legitimate businesses. There's an opportunity cost to the harvest being so strong.
Yes, there is. And I think we're going to see the UN Office for Drugs and Crime. They say that the amount of opium produced in Afghanistan this year is larger than global demand. The illegitimate trade from drugs is going to crowd out the legal economy in the years to come. There's going to be increased competition for illegal products. One senior diplomat this week said to me, this has really become a criminal state.
The BBC's David Loin in Kabul. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. It was a pleasure joining you.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning that Shell Oil is close to a deal with the government in Iraq to build an $11 billion petrochemical plant in the south of that country. A tough loss for Starbucks in the U.S. It'll have to pay $2.8 billion after an arbitration case did not go its way. It was fighting with Kraft Foods over a broken contract. Starbucks wanted more help from Kraft to sell its coffee in grocery stores. Now let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down about 0.2% at the moment. The FT 100 in London is sharply down, 1.1% drop right now. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong dropped 0.2% overnight. Oil is up to $93.30 a barrel, and the euro is lower still, down to just about $1.34 to the dollar. Last night at Christie's, a triptych by Francis Bacon went for $142.3 million. That's the most ever for a work of art, which sold after what the auction house called 6 minutes of fierce telephone bidding. On the block at Sotheby's in New York tonight, it's just possible a new record will be broken. Andy Warhol's Silver Car Crash, Double Disaster, 15 prints of photos of a horrific car crash on the left, a rectangle of silver on the right. Art critic and writer Blake Gopnik is here. Morning, Blake.
Good morning, David.
Now, I thought a buyer at an auction would want to buy this at the lowest cost, get a deal, a steal on the thing?
I think that would be the wrong thing to do with this particular picture especially.
How come?
Because the whole point of this picture is about the way we love commodities in this country, the way America's all about high prices, objects you want to buy. So if I were a billionaire buying this picture, I want to spend at least $100 million on it, because that's what Damien Hirst sold his diamond-studded skull for. So it seems to me you want to match that magical price tag. And I might even bid myself up to $250 million, which is what Cézanne sold for to the royal family in Doha.
Help me understand this. It's a bit like when a house sells. It can set prices for the entire street.
Yeah, that's true if you're thinking in terms of the art market. And it's true that collectors love to raise the prices on their works because everything else they own becomes worth more money.
That's the case?
You own a bunch of Warhols. If one of them makes a record price, then all of a sudden you own a whole bunch of other Warhols worth $60, $80
million. So I see.
But the weird thing about this picture is that the higher price it fetches, the better it is as art. If this thing goes for $100 million, it's a kind of apotheosis of a lot of what Warhol was all about, maybe everything that Warhol was all about.
But you're hurting my head here. You're saying that the more expensive it is, the better it is.
This is something I would never normally say. I'm famous as a kind of scold. I hate the art market. I go after auctions all the time. But in this case, this picture, it seems to me, is all about Warhol turning a tragedy, something really sad, a car wrapped around a tree, into a glitzy commodity. That's what Warhol did with his own life, right? He turns himself into the ultimate commodity. So if this tragedy goes for more money, then he's done a better job of what his pictures are all about. Half this picture is all silver. It's basically a silver ingot. So half this picture already turns itself into pure value, pure commodity. And if this goes for even more money, then that's realized in a really complete way. He's finally shown that this culture that he lived in, that we live in, is about nothing else than buying and selling.
Blake Gopnik is working on a comprehensive biography of Andy Warhol. Mr. Gopnik, thank you.
Thank you.
And we discovered the other day that the Marketplace New York Bureau, where I am now, is located across the street from the first of Andy Warhol's original warehouse studios. At one point in the 60s, the interior of this site of artistic innovation and debauchery was lined completely in aluminum foil and silver paint. Nowadays, it's a completely nondescript parking garage. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.